the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
After the twilight, always the sunrise, but the glow of morning comes with small arms fire. Ignore the deadline, there's no divine right. Enter the gods and all the sacred signs.
It is Friday, October 11th, 2019. My name is Jesse Carey, and you are listening to Ye Olde Relevant Podcast. Here with me on today's show, the medieval themed episode for a reason that will never become clear. Here with me, our creative director, John David Harris, but I like to call him JD. JD, welcome to the show.
Huzzah!
I feel like that was an appropriate medieval greeting.
That was. Squire and senior writer Tyler Huckabee. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Bonjour. I'm going to stick with my traditional French greeting, which is also the greeting of the French knights and kings of the Middle Ages.
I don't know that. And with us, sporting his brand new friar haircut, our illustrious producer Chandler Strang. Hello. We have a really great show for you today, despite the intro there. We talk with Jeff Bethke. He joins us today. He's got a brand new book coming out. It's called To Hell with Hustle: Reclaiming Your Life in an Overworked, Overspent, and Overconnected World. I love how Christian book titles are comfortable getting edgier now. Like, I've seen hell. I've seen hell in a couple titles, and it wasn't like the theology of hell. You know, it was To Hell with Hustle. You know, like Christian music went through that like in the 80s. When Stryper did To Hell with the Devil.
To Hell with the Devil. Yeah, exactly. But I think the publishing industry has been pretty skittish on some of this for a while. You know, you got Lifeway. But maybe this is part of the brick and mortar downfall, is that now you have to compete with like Bezos and Amazon and all that.
Yeah.
You have to spice up your titles a little bit. I'm trying to think of other examples of all that. I'm sure they're out there.
I think that was the main reason why that whole industry has been so resistant to edgy titles like this up until recently is because, like, you know, you don't know if the proprietors of the local Christian bookstore are going to feel comfortable with it. You know, it's not To Heck with Hustle, it's To Hell with Hustle on the display. And I don't know, like, we had our Christian bookstore around here growing up, it's called Heaven and Earth. I don't know if the good people that owned Heaven and Earth would be comfortable with this.
Would be comfortable putting this. Yeah. Same with I had Lifeway. I had a Lifeway store right there at Moody Bible Institute, my alma mater. They've come up a lot lately on the podcast. Shout out to the people at Moody. I don't think they like to claim me anymore, but you can't take away my diploma. You can't take away my diploma. I've already got it. You have to pry it from my cold, dead hands. But that was a pretty safe, it was a pretty tame bookstore.
Yeah. Yeah. JD, what was your Christian bookstore growing up, or did you even go to one?
I went to one. We had one called Tampa Christian Supply. And so all of the Tampa Bay area, if you were a Christian, you could get all of your Christian supplies there at Tampa Christian Supply.
Mine growing up were definitely called like book and gift stores because that's what they sold. But yours is like a supply store, because when I think of supply, I think of like the tractor supply or something, you know what I mean? Where farmers go to get a new blade for the combine or, you know, feed or something. Like, what supplies were they selling?
Well, so, I mean, basically it was just a bookstore, you know, it had like all of the Christian books and, you know, rows and rows of Bibles. And it had the little CD tray where you could look through all the Christian CDs and stuff.
Yeah.
I will say it did have a nice collection of wannabe Thomas Kincaid paintings.
Oh, sure.
And, sure. And also other, Christian themed you know, house ornaments, which you don't need anymore because now we have Hobby Lobby, so you can get all of those there. They did have a small section for like liturgical robes.
Yeah,
and
mine had that too, and I never saw one person
ever
in all my times visiting. I never saw one person like purchasing or even acknowledging the robes were back there.
Right? No, you know, it was almost like they had to do it to fulfill the quota, like in order to keep the supply. aspect of their name. We're like, we can't just be books. We can't just be CDs. We need supplies.
Get them robes.
Get them robes. I was always curious if, as a kid, I remember being curious if that's where our church bought their like communion wafers and little cups, because those would be, you know, Christian
that's
supplies.
Supply.
But I think they just ordered them from some other place.
I had when I was very briefly at a church I was helping out with in Chicago in charge of the communion situation. And then one morning it was like, oh no, that's today, the first Sunday of the month. I totally forgotten about it. We were out of supplies. We didn't have anything. So I ran down to our local CVS and, you know, I got the little cracker, the little oyster crackers. That wasn't a problem, but they didn't have any grape juice. It was all like cran grape or like, you know, banana. It was all like mixes. And I don't know what the Bible's rules are about this. I don't know if grape is the mandate. I'm aware that the grape juice for usually serving probably doesn't have a whole lot of grape involved anyway. So I didn't want to be too, I wasn't going to get, so I just got that, went for the cran grape thing. Nobody said anything. I don't think anybody noticed. Jesus didn't strike me down, but I do want to confess that because I don't think I ever told anybody about that.
Yeah. Well, it's good to get you that there was a cranberry infused in your communion. I'm sure you've been laying awake at night ever since then. And tonight you'll have the first good night's sleep in years. it's true because I don't know how much of communion juice, it, like you said, actually contains grape. It's mostly like purple sugar water because like there are like juices called like juicy juice where it's like juice. Both juices are like misspelled in the title because it's like, well, it's not juice, it's juicy juice, you know?
Right, like, yeah. So they don't have to really like stand by the like claim that it's juice. We never said it was juice. We said it was juice.
Like
O-O-S.
it's like Kraft singles never claim to be cheese. They're just Kraft singles. Why would you think this is a cheese product?
Yeah, well, if you thought that was cheese, that's on you. We did it. We made it very clear.
I feel like there's a whole market that is missing out on this because I don't know if you've noticed, but there's so many things that are coming out with just like things that we've always had, but they've just made them look really simple and like the branding is clean and stuff. Good things like even like Harry's or something like razor blades have been around for a while, but they just kind of branded them a little bit and made it a little cooler. I feel like there's a communion brand waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
It really is. Because I remember at the point where the whole operation got a little too slick and I was like, got a little uncomfortable with how like commodified it seemed. Like, I can't remember in which church, but they handed them out. They passed them, like the ushers at this point, I like at least going to get the sacraments from someone up at the front of the church to get the Jews to get the.
You like the walk. You like the walk.
I like
the
walk. But okay. I went to a church one time.
Is that what it is?
Baptists like to walk.
They like their they like their altar calls.
Yeah. Big fan. But either way, I like. Honestly, I just get restless. It's hard to sit through the entire church
without an hour.
I'll get up to go to the bathroom. I don't even have to go. I can't sit here. Like, you know, the weird thing is your legs never get more tired than during standing for worship. Has anyone had that experience? This is going on. Like, we've been standing for like 25. I can't remember the last time I stood for 25 straight minutes without sitting. All I'm thinking about is sitting. I know I shouldn't be thinking this, but that's what I'm thinking. My legs are, you know, they can barely sustain my body weight. But then like 10 minutes into the sermon, I'm like, I need to walk around. I hope they do some kind of communion thing. But anyway, they got too fancy at one point and they started doing the communion cups with the wafer,
vacuum
sealed onto the lid.
Yeah, sure.
And peeled it off. And it was like almost
McDonald's.
I was like, this isn't how communion should be served. This is how you eat a Dunkaroo. Like it's too, you know, this is, it just got too fancy for me, you know?
Do you like that? Because I went to a church for a while in Lincoln that really went for it with like the, they did real wine up front. Like you had to go there. It was poured into a giant, like Last Crusade, like Indiana Jones Last Crusade type goblet that you drank out of. And the bread was like artisanal. And I was like, this feels kind of like, then it, I mean, I'm aware that's like an artifice too. Cause now you're just being like, now you're just trying to get the hipsters in there. Like, oh, they have like fresh baked bread. That's how I like my community. But it was at least like, if you skip breakfast, it tided you over a little bit.
Yeah, you got
a lot of it.
I kind of feel like when you're saying that's like the hipstery thing, I feel like there needs to be at least one episode of Portlandia that's just dedicated to hipstery Christian like
the cool
stuff.
The cool church.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of material there.
Oh, there's tons of material. But yeah, so I need the mid service walk to really get around. But yeah. All that to say, Jeff Bethke to hell with hustle. too edgy for the mom and pop shop.
I can't believe we're saying it.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying it so liberally and freely. So if you go down to your local Christian supply store, you may get fancy communion cups. But I don't know. It's a question mark whether this book will be there. So, but he's coming up later. So you know what? We'll take a break here and we'll come back with this week's hot list.
These pieces in my brain, reflections etched in. Oh no, it's okay. All along we had good intentions. These pieces in my brain, reflections etched in play. We lost you not in vain. All along we had good intentions.
You're listening to Good Intentions by Magdalena Bay. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard Good Luck by Broken Bells. Big fan of Broken Bells. Glad they're
been a while.
The
yeah, been a while. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool to hear them back. Can I tell you guys something? Can I bring some news? I know this isn't a slice. This is just personal.
Okay.
Personal news.
Please.
I bought tickets for, I've never done one of these before. This is my first time, and I don't know what I'm getting myself into at all here, but I bought myself some tickets to Comic-Con Paris, the French Comic-Con. Which is, as I'm sure most people know, the cons are like, it's like a meeting of all the nerds, all the French nerds. Usually in the States, they debut a lot of like big movie trailers for upcoming superhero movies and stuff there. They're not really going to do much of that here, but there's some like, they kind of sent like the B team over as far as the stars are concerned. But hey, it's usually in New York and LA, so I don't really get to go, but it happens to be in Paris while I'm here. So I'm heading that direction.
When is it, Tyler?
It's Halloween, the last weekend here in October.
Oh, that's cool.
All Hallows Eve?
On All Hallows, sorry. It's okay. All Hallows Eve.
There you go. You mean Harvest Festival night. Holy Ghost Weenie Roast night. Trunk or Treat night. I gotcha. Then that's when it's... Yeah, so like the L.A. At the L.A. Comic Con, it's like Robert Downey Jr. and Brie Larson. In Paris, it's like a second-rate villain from one of those WP or CW superhero shows. You know, like, who's that guy?
Guy number three. It's like, oh yeah, that shows. I saw that on a preview on the side of my browser one time. that person popped up.
It's like this guy once played a vampire on Buffy the Vampire Slayer in 2005.
You know who they got? This is good. They got Ben McKenzie, who is now the lead in that Gotham show that I don't watch. The Batman show on FX, but more famously known, obviously, as Ryan Atwood in The OC. That's who he'll always be, as far as I'm concerned. I'm a big OC fan. That was a bit. OC was my show.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see he's still getting some work.
The Paris Comic Con crowd is going to love him.
Well, you know, I have an item in the hot list just for you, Tyler, that we'll get to.
I can't wait.
But without further ado, it's time for this week's.
It's the hot list. The hot list.
It's coming in hot today, guys.
Never get told. Never get told.
Coming in hot. JD, I'm interested in your take on this first one.
Oh boy,
one.
Here we go.
A new quote unquote true movie about a strange exorcism at a military base is coming. It's from horror auteur Osgood Perkins. He'll write and direct the upcoming film for Lionsgate, and it's titled incident at Fort Bragg. Here is the official synopsis from Deadline. The pick is inspired by the true story of renowned writer and Irish Catholic priest Malachi Martin, who was brought in by the U.S. government to perform a sanctioned exorcism on a young soldier at the famed army base. However, it's probably important to note that despite its, you know, true story distinction, military experts don't really have too much of an idea about the actual events. This is from a piece on military.com. Martin was a famous guy back in the day who used the popularity of The Exorcist to make himself the go-to expert on the subject for magazines and TV shows. The internet doesn't easily cough up any details about the Bragg incident, and so far, it's impossible to confirm the based on a true story angle here. If there really was an exorcism at Fort Bragg that involved Martin, it would have had to take place sometime between the early 60s and his death in July of 1999. There's no word on a release date. JD, I know you like, you're a movie guy, but you also like stuff about the supernatural. What's your take on like exorcism movies?
I don't know. Like sometimes it feels just like a easy trope to rehash. But then also, you know, being a believer, there's something that's really terrifying about that idea, because I mean, you see in scriptures, there's evidence of crazy things. I mean, one of Jesus's favorite pastime was not passing out demons, but casting out demons. And he's just passing out demons left and right. but so I feel like the potential realism there, especially growing up in a, a more like charismatic church, definitely lends itself to feel more creepy to me. But at the same time, I feel like some of it just feels so rehashed. You're like, okay, so they're going to speak in Latin. Okay, so their head's going to spin. Okay, so they're going to have scratches all over themselves.
They're going to do that weird arching back walk thing.
Right. Like, what new form of exorcism are we going to like
JD,
drop
it's on
into?
A military base.
It's on you missed the military part.
Like, that's the pitch. But like the studio pitch, he's like, all right, I'm going to do an exorcism movie. And the studio executives are like, that's it. He's like, it's on a military base. Sold. We're in. Sold. Let's do this thing.
Based on a true story? Like, well, they can't prove it's not a true story. Right. So,
sure. Yeah, sure. Might have happened. I don't know. Might have. I don't like horror movies. Don't bother me. But I don't know. I don't enjoy watching movies about exorcisms, which there, it seems like there's quite a number these, Scott Derrickson, who, you know, a lot of people know his work best for directing Doctor Strange. He's also a Christian and he's been in the magazine a number of times. But one of his early films was, I think it was The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Is that right?
That was the last like exorcism film that came out that I actually felt, was pretty interesting and handled the subject matter well. With them like kind of showing the contrast between actually trying to take into account some of the new understandings that we have of like psychology and mental health and those kinds of things and playing that into the scenario and really showing how in certain scenarios they really try to take all that into account before they just resort to it's a demon. I thought it was interesting. And it was also interesting the way that they set that one in a courtroom after the case, recounting the tale and kind of going through it that way, telling the story in a little bit of a different way. So that was the last one that I really liked. But I also, it was the creepiest thing to me in that movie was there's a scene where she has like sleep paralysis and her boyfriend like wakes up and she's laying on the ground, like paralyzed, staring at him. That was creepier than any of the like crazy demonic floating up in the air stuff. It's just this one like haunting shot of her staring up at him through these like kind of cold eyes as she's sleep paralyzed. That was the thing that haunted me more than her like speaking Latin and spewing up pea soup.
Well, you know what, JD, you know what would have made it better than just in a courtroom if the courtroom's on a military base.
Oh, yeah. That's it. It's like a JAG tribunal or something.
Yeah, this does seem kind of destined. This seems like it's got, like, they're really trying to target, like, the conservative America, like red state America, yeah, with this. Like, yeah, it's a supernatural movie, so you got the, like, the church element. It's on the, yeah, military base, so you know people are gonna like that. All you have to do is, like, cast Chris Pratt in here, and you're, I'd say you're pretty much set to go.
The priest is Chris Pratt fighting.
Yeah, there's a scene between Chris Pratt and Kevin Sorbo, and he's like, I want the truth. He's like, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah, he says it in, like, the voice of, like, 10 people. Yeah. Okay. next item. I don't want to give too much commentary. I'm just going to jump right into it. Chip and Joe are our favorite couple. They're building a hotel that you can go stay at, and you'll feel like you're actually in a rerun of Fixer Upper. So, you know, right now, Chip and Joanna Gaines, they're two of the, I don't know how they do all of this, to be honest with you.
No, I don't.
They've basically
either
taken over Target. Like half of Target right now is Chip and Joe Magnolia stuff. So, you know, they posted.
It's an industry.
It really is. You know, so they posted the show. They write books. They're launching actually a cable network. They run that giant market, you know, cafe store hangout in Waco. They have the Silobration festivals there. yeah, like I said, they have the giant line of Target goods, and now they're building a hotel. They recently explained in a YouTube announcement video, they are converting one of downtown Waco's old buildings, which is, it's about 100 years old, and they're going to make it into a boutique hotel. They plan on opening it to the public sometime in 2021. They are also working on plans for a $10 million Magnolia Market nearby. And that'll have, you know, even more shops for you to pick up your shiplap, your repurposed mason jars and milk bottles and decorative 10 buckets of sticks. Like, literally, I was on their website, and I'm like, one of the products that they sell is a 10 bucket filled with sticks, like, that looks like they were just collected in a yard, and it's like $50. I mean, good for them.
I admire the hustle. You got to respect the hustle, but it's,
you know,
still,
what they need?
It's odd to me.
They need to open a Christian supply store.
Oh, they would knock it out of the park.
Well, I mean, you say that jokingly, but some of the stuff, like the wall art that they have at the Magnolia Market store, has like Bible verses on it. It's not, yeah, it's basically an elevated Christian supply store is what, yep, it is, you know,
little communion 10 buckets filled with communion wafers.
But they could do better than the wafer thing. I think Chip and Joe would put a little bit of heart, like, it'd have a little bit of, like, the cross, like what do you call the, like, the little cross or hatch on top that makes it, lets you know that it was, like, made that day. They just kind of rake it with a fork, I think, before they put it in the oven. Do you know what I'm talking about? Can you kind of see that? I'm gonna get the bakers, the relevant podcast baking fans on my case for not knowing what these are called. So I apologize for that. But it's like a lattice. It just looks like they kind of raked it with a fork before it went into the oven. And then it comes out, it's got a little bit of some grooves in it. That's how you know it was really made there. And that's what I'd like to see out of the Chip and Joe communion wafer situation.
Well, I know how they would serve. I know how they would serve the, I would assume for them, grape juice in tiny little glass mason jars that are just passed down the row, you know?
Yeah, so they would hide the communion behind a giant picture of what old communion looked like, and on the count of three they would move it out of the way to reveal what communion was this week.
Yeah, the shabby chic barnyard communion.
They pour it out of a decanter into the cups, like you get a little swirl around. Do I detect? I detect a little bit of a rootsy nose in there.
Is that cranberry?
Who put cranberry in here? Get this heretic out! Chip just manhandles you and throws you out of the church Uncle Phil and DJ Jazzy Jeff. Which actually brings me to my next item, a Fresh Prince
DJ
reference.
Jazzy Jeff brings you your next item?
Will Smith join TikTok. And he did it with the help of Andy Mineo and Lecrae. So he made an announcement video. It's a short little like TikTok style video that shows him. It uses like a little CGI effect that shows him being plucked from an iPhone and being literally dropped onto the platform of TikTok. All while Andy Mineo and Lecrae's Coming in Hot plays in the background. Of course, you know, Will Smith is best known right now is you know, kind of, I still think he's A-list, maybe A-minus list movie star, but he has more than, he's got nearly 40 million followers on Instagram. He's a big deal on the gram. So the jump to TikTok makes sense. But he, interestingly, he's not the first celebrity to co-sign on the song. Steph Curry was recently interviewed and he was asked if he could choose any theme song to his life, what would it be? And he chose Lecrae and Andy Mineo's Coming in Hot. I want to hear your guys' thoughts, but first, Chandler, let's hear a clip. They got the iron while I got the steamer. I bring the fire, but you never seen her. I testify, I don't need a subpoena. They want my soul, better go to Korea. I love my dog just like I'm Peter. Gotta protect him. I made the call, but just like I'm reffing. I know we left you, now we back together, but I guess that is better now, later than never. Like, what's happening? I'ma need y'all, quit asking when. Me and my wife gonna have some kids. Right now, we just practicing. Practicing. Teacher said, quit rapping, man. Okay, talk about edgy. Talk about Christian edgy.
No kidding. Me and my wife are gonna have kids. Andy threw down there. Because that probably wouldn't. You couldn't find that in Lifeway either. No way, right?
No.
You can't practice in Lifeway.
No.
Yeah, exactly. That's against the ethos, man. You can't. Yeah. There's no practicing for having kids.
They have a strictly quiverful mentality at Lifeway.
Yeah.
That song will not be sold at the Magnolia Market. Okay. I think it's funny because, you know, Will Smith, when he was regularly making music, you know, in his heyday, he wasn't a Christian artist, you know, but he wasn't that far from it because he does what a lot of Christian artists do now is they don't make explicitly Christian music. They just, you know, don't use profanity. But that was kind of Will Smith's thing.
It's not Christian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe he could be. He has a big footprint on social media. But I want to talk about Will Smith real quick. Do you guys think Will Smith is relevant in any way anymore?
Here's the deal. It depends who you ask, because my 5-year-old son loves Will Smith. He is obsessed with him.
Gen Z. Will's got Gen Z.
Ever since that terrible, terrible Aladdin movie, he is obsessed with him. He will see a commercial with him on it, or, you know, a billboard or something, and he's like, "Is that Will Smith? That's Will Smith! Oh my gosh, that's Will Smith!" He loves him. It's crazy.
Tyler, what are your Will Smith thoughts?
I've got a lot, man. Okay. I think so. Will, I'm 34 years old, so I came of age in the era of like peak Will Smith, right?
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, Fresh Prince, and then got a little Men in Black, Bad Boys. I was Independence Day. Like, so I've lived Will Smith at his absolute best, and I feel like it's a sign of how much goodwill he has that I'm still I'm still rooting for the guy, right? Even though he hasn't made a good movie probably since the Bush administration, I'm still like
which
pulling
one?
For him. I don't know. Because what do we got? I mean, I think he's had movies that made money. But I don't think I would say that I've liked any. And he makes some baffling, like he famously turned down The Matrix. Keanu Reeves was number two choice. He turned that down. Famously turned down Django. Jamie Foxx had to take that one up instead. He's just not good at picking the movies that he's in.
Yeah.
And instead he went for what? Like, what are the Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aladdin probably looks good on paper. Aladdin probably made sense on paper, and then it made a lot of money. It just wasn't a very good movie.
Right, yeah.
But I'm still pulling for the guy. I want every movie that he's in, I want to be good. I want to go down and see a good Will Smith movie. It just hasn't happened for me in a long time.
It is interesting that he's so, you know, he has a resurgence with like Gen Z and younger, like not just your children, JD, but then also I think because he has two children who are both very cool and you know very prominent artists, it's almost like, and he has such a big following on Instagram, and I think obviously the move to TikTok, I'm surprised he's not already on TikTok, much less making an announcement video with LeCrae and Andy Mineo. But it's interesting that he has such a like a large appeal among the generation like just slightly below ours. It's almost like he's like the dad of Gen Z. You know what I mean? Like Will Smith is like the cool dad for, you know, people right now that are between the age of like 16 and 24. It's like, yeah, do you guys kind of see that? Like Will Smith being cool dad, but definitely still can go dad mode.
I get it. Oh yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I actually think that there's a, I think there's room for there to be a Fresh Prince reboot with him playing an Uncle Phil like character.
Oh,
He really has kind of morphed into Uncle Phil in a lot of ways.
He's got some Uncle Phil vibes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's definitely like could be the cool uncle, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think he would be, I don't think he would want to be Uncle Phil, you know?
No, I don't see that either.
I think Will's like way too choosy about, like he always wants to be the cool guy in the movie.
Yeah.
He can't ever be, he's not going to be the villain. He's not going to be the like washed up square. I can't see him being too happy with, but he would maybe be like the, I don't know what I would like for him to return to TV for sure. I just don't know what capacity that would be in.
Maybe they'll make him a deal though. Maybe they'll be like, you come back as Mr. Phil and we'll give you Gemini Man too.
You know what my thought is? Is having seen Will on social media where he's really good as like a storyteller, like he's still just a great fun personality. I think he could take over one of these late night talk shows. I think he would be I think he'd be a phenomenal like behind the desk. I don't think he'd want to do it. I think he would say, I think that's like a step down for him. He has to work every day. But I feel like the Will Smith like late night talk show would be must watch viewing.
I would rather watch him than Fallon. I'd rather watch Will Smith. For sure. You know.
For sure. Yeah. Well, that's my advice. Get in touch, man. Let's talk. I've got some ideas. This is just a taste. Just a taste of my career paths that I've got in motion for you.
Call me. If you're interested in doing a late night TV show that will shoot in my garage and you will also come to live in my house and be an Uncle Phil, like wide, sage, wholesome figure in my life, please call me. Please reach out and I'll stop mailing you those creepy letters made of cutout magazine letters. So let's just get a deal.
Can I pay you? No. Do I have ideas? Not really. Do I have connections? No. Where am I going with this? I'm not sure. But do call me. But I just want to talk. I really just need a friend.
You're really like cool. Nice you're really cool to hang out.
You're a really cool guy. I've liked you for a long time.
Your Instagram video where you're like ziplining in Costa Rica in the rainforest, giving an inspirational speech about courage, really moved
just
me.
It's very charming.
It's literally the best thing I saw in the last 2 years. So please reach out. Please, I'm begging you.
Love Will.
All right, Tyler. This one's just for you. Brie Larson. This is number two on the hot list. Brie Larson has spoken with the studio about an all-woman Marvel mashup movie. So Variety recently asked her if she's discussed the standalone film that would have Black Widow, Mantis, Scarlet Witch, Pepper Potts, Valkyrie, who, of course, they all appeared together in that climactic scene in Endgame. And they asked her if she'd discuss the possibility with Marvel Studios president Kevin Feige. Here's what her response was. She said, I'll say that a lot of the female cast members from Marvel walked up to Kevin and were like, we are in this together and we want to do this. What that means, I have no idea. You know, I'm not in charge of the future of Marvel, but it is something that we're really passionate about and we love. And I feel like if enough people out in the world talk about how much they want it, maybe it'll happen. According to Box Office Mojo, Captain Marvel is actually the sixth most successful film in the entire MCU, considering there's like, 24 MCU movies? Coming in at number six, and it hasn't been out that long, is pretty impressive.
I think it would work. I think it'd be a good time. I think that the very first Avengers movie had one woman to, seven guys, all told? Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Hawkeye, and Hulk. Yeah. One woman to five guys. So I feel like it'd be, it's time to like, I think we could flip that equation. I think that would go. Yeah. I think people would be that would be only fair if you got the ladies of the MCU with Captain Marvel in charge, and then you could throw in like one token male just to balance things, just to get the I don't know which one it would be.
Yeah,
they're all kind of we're losing them, like they're dropping like flies out there. We don't have Iron Man anymore. We don't have Captain America. Spoiler for a movie that's been out for 6 months. But that so I don't know who it'd be, but I would love to see that. And there's comic book precedent too.
Oh, for
you could
sure.
probably just have Nick Fury be the token dude.
Oh, that's true. Samuel L. loves these movies. What a good time to be Samuel L. Jackson. That guy just collects his paycheck, walks in, delivers a couple lines. Captain Marvel was easily his first like actual role in these. Before that, they could give him the script day one, be like, yeah, got it. All right. Sayonara, everybody.
Well, Gwyneth Paltrow like didn't even realize that she's been in some of these movies, you know, like there's that cooking show on Netflix where Jon Favreau, you know, who plays Happy, you know, was like, yo, remember we talked about it when we were filming Spider-Man, you know,
whichever one,
Homecoming Far From Home. She's like, what, I was in that? Like, yeah, I saw a late night interview this week where she's like, nah, I haven't even seen the movie, much less, you know, she has very little knowledge. All that to say is like, yeah, for some of those characters, I feel like they're either in or they're out, right? If we want Pepper Potts, give her a big role in the movie. But otherwise, her just, you know, basically telling fans how she phones this entire thing in. She doesn't see why it's such a big deal. It's a problem. Like, give her a prominent role or just get her out of the movie. So
well, the MCU sort of phoned her in a little bit. I'm not the biggest biggest Gwyneth Paltrow fan out there, but they have not, it's not like they've been giving her a lot of script work that really needs a lot of dedication on her part. She can probably just fly in on her goop copter every day, recite her two or three lines and then head back. She does it. It's like you're talking 45 minutes both ways out of her.
Maybe
day.
That's what we need is a Gwyneth Paltrow or a Pepper Potts Nick Fury movie.
Oh,
just
like
to
a
give
buddy
them
cop.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they've been there from the beginning, from Iron Man 1, they were there, and they've been slumming it along the entire time with these little cameos and bit roles. Now it's time for them to have their moment in the sunshine. They could get one of those new TV shows they're putting on the Disney Plus thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Fun. I think it should be a cooking show between Nick Fury and Pepper Potts. You know, I mean, why not?
With a name like Pepper Potts, the woman has to know how to cook. It's just baked into her name.
Yeah. Pepper Nick Potts Fury. Also a big, yeah. Pepper Potts is a big popular item in the Magnolia Market. It's just a big pot, but they call it the Pepper Pot. And it's like, it looks like it was like dented and rustic somehow. It looks like they salvaged it from an old barn, you know, in upstate New York, and they sell it for $60 at Magnolia Market. The Pepper Pot. Number one on ye olde hot list this week, a church created a Bohemian Rhapsody parody video centered on the Enneagram. So Rivers Crossing Church in Ohio, they're getting ready to kick off a sermon series called What's Your Number? And as part of a compliment to the teaching, the worship team, presumably the worship team, created a 6-minute deep dive into the sacred personality identification system set to Queen's classic rock anthem. Here is a clip of Enneagram Rhapsody.
Is this my whole life? Are these just tendencies? I'm overwhelmed by all of these personalities. Open your eyes from once to the night.
I'm just a 4 boy. I need more sympathy.
Cause my feelings go.
Oh, man.
They were high, now they're low.
Will okay, we've heard enough.
Yes.
I get the picture.
Well, I think, wow. All right. So, Jesse, you and I talked about this a little bit offline.
We did.
And I got it. Here's what I got to do. I got to hand it to this church because they went for it. And you're never going to hear me knock a church that really goes for it like these guys did. So I do wonder a little bit about the use of time and resources for something like this. but I respect the choice, and I think the lyrics worked okay.
Yeah, I mean, I am not like an Enneagram, fanatic.
Yeah, you're not an Enneagram head, are you?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I always forget what my number is, or what, or when I do remember our number, I'm like, I don't know what characteristics or attributes are attached to that. But I mean, this was a literal deep dive into it. Like, it was, if in order for you to enjoy this song on the merits of its parody, you have to know all these obscure Enneagram things.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you really do.
And plus, say what you will about the concept, an Enneagram parody of Bohemian Rhapsody, but the production value is extremely high.
That's what I mean. Like, they went for
there's
it.
There's a guitar really, solo and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't have to, they could have. It could have been one guy on a piano. We would have gotten the idea. But this is a full Queen cover. They have everybody in there. They spared no expense for this. And the guy can sing. He doesn't have bad voice. He can hit that. That's a tough vocal part. And he hits those notes. That's no mean feat. So I'll hats off to that. And he really goes for it. If you watch the video, the visuals are a big part of it, because he really cuts loose. Too. He's a born performer. He's a showman. He's a seven. Gotta be.
JD, you've been involved in the creative aspects of churches.
Yes.
Tell me, as someone who's been on the who's been on the inside, what you think of both the concept and the execution of Enneagram Rhapsody.
I feel like this is like the perfect storm of church shenanigans, because it's got an aged pop culture reference. You gotta have it.
Because the Queen movie came out like Bohemian Rhapsody had a resurgence. It's probably been like 14 months now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you also have an excuse for your worship team to show off their chops. So that's number two. And then the third one, and this is the newer one, is you tap it into Enneagram, and I think.
Yeah.
I think as far as creating postmodern church buzz, this ticks off all three. So, I mean, good for them for doing it. I think if this is what we can look forward to replace the At the Movie series every summer at your church, then I'm for it, because that is the worst. And if we can replace it with Queen covers, then why not? What I'd like to hear is like Second Assembly Baptist from Bithlow, Florida, try to do their rendition of it. And then, because what's happening now is that there are a bunch of other churches around America that have seen this, and they're like, well, shoot, you know, Jeff can sing that part. Why don't we do that this Sunday? And then all of a sudden, poor Jeff is dropped this YouTube video from his senior pastor. and now he has to figure out a way how to pull this off this Sunday. And he's like, all I got is myself on an acoustic guitar and Aunt Ethel on the organ. And we have to come up with our own Queen cover. And so I'm looking forward to
sound
that
like
version.
Freddie Mercury. Yeah. I do like this better, like you said, than Movie Sunday, or like the Sermon on the Mount through the lens of Stranger Things. You know, loving your neighbor in the Upside Down. You know, the Upside Down Kingdom. You know, I much prefer the Queen cover.
Take it, because this at least kind of embraces the kitschiness of it anyway, instead of pretending that like we're doing something really important here. Not to knock the Enneagram or the message or anything like that, but at least they're kind of embrace the frivolity of the whole thing, instead of some of the really bad like Lord of the Rings knockoffs that they're somehow still doing. 2019, the year of our Lord, and get ready, because they're having that new Amazon Lord of the Rings show coming out, so we're gonna get a whole nother round of Lord of the Rings sermons, illustrations.
Oh boy,
can't wait.
Yeah,
it means it's time for my once a decade sabbatical from church.
Well, listen, if you want to see the full video of Enneagram Rhapsody, it's over on relevantmagazine.com. All right, that'll do it for the hot list. Next up, Jeff Bethke joins us. You're listening to The Night Has Opened My Eyes by Hot Flash Heatwave. Well, today's featured interview is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or even an online store, it's all included with Squarespace. Creating your website with Squarespace is a simple, intuitive process. You can add and arrange your content and features with the click of a mouse. You can even design a best-in-class store with Squarespace's award-winning templates, customizable settings, and more. And that's all without a single plugin, including all the tools you need to track inventory, process orders, and send custom emails in one intuitive interface. Squarespace Commerce allows you to understand every aspect of your business. Be sure to go to squarespace.com/relevant for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch your site, use the offer code RELEVANT to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Well, Jeff Bethke is an author and podcaster, and in his new book, To Hell with Hustle, Reclaiming Your Life in an Overworked, Overspent, and Overconnected World, he looks at why modern culture's obsession with efficiency, work, and quote-unquote success could be negatively affecting our spiritual lives. I recently had a chance to speak with Jeff about the book and why we should all be rethinking the idea of hustle. Here's part of my conversation with Jeff Bethke. Why did you want to write something that is sort of counter to a message which we hear a lot, which is you got to hustle and you got to, you know, have, you know, side gigs and you got to do all this stuff to achieve big things. Why did you want to tackle it kind of from the other side?
Well, I think exactly because of what you just said. I think the message is just becoming bombarding, right? It's becoming over. It's just coming from, it's an onslaught from internet, from influencers, from personalities, from just like the spirit and zeitgeist of the age, to use a fun word. Yeah, I think it's just so bombarding. I kind of start asking the question, like, because I just turned 30, so I, you know, millennial, you know, like just out of college for the last like, you know, 6-7 years, and kind of like feeling that same weight that a lot of us feel in this generation. And I think I just start asking a question, like, this is kind of the premise of the book, really, which is hustle, is that inundation of this spirit or this do more, be more, you know, connect more, try to achieve more, retire at, you know, age 19, blah, blah, blah. Is that forming us more into the image of Jesus or not? Right. Mm. And I think that's kind of the premise of the book is this, are we really taking a step back and asking, what is this doing to our souls, our humanness? And especially as people who, as followers of Jesus, is this making us distinct and any different? Meaning like we should always have we should feel different and look different at some levels. And I realized that this one, kind of this hustle spirit, we hadn't kind of put up the gate against this one as much as we do some other things that culture will throw at us. Yeah. So we're kind of going along just as heavily. And so then I just kind of said, man, what is this doing? First of all, I guess the book started, and I started about this in chapter one. First, it was like, what is this doing to me? Right. Mm. I talk about that in chapter one. Like I think me and my wife kind of reached the logical conclusion of this stuff quicker than most, just because of, you know, providence or whatever you want to call it, where, you know, had a job we loved, you know, very early, you know, 23 years old, I'm doing what I love. You know, maybe even getting more noticed than most people at age 22, just based on like the coincidence of the viral video and all of that stuff. So some of these things that, like, you know, was married, had kids, bought a house, just all these things that like benchmarks, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm saying this isn't working. There's something about this is not kind of giving us what it promised. And so, yeah, so the book is kind of I wouldn't say memoir, but it's a heavy look of first starting with our own life of like, man, this didn't give us what it said it was going to give us. And in fact, some of these benchmarks, thinking that they had to be ducks in a row that we had to like hit one by one by one by one by one, actually led to more burnout, more anxiousness, more tension. And so then it was a first look at me. Then I really started looking at culture at large, all these different things, and saying, oh man, this is pervasive. This is, serious. And I think this is actually kind of one of the core things that actually is kind of, you can almost trace all the current problems back to, if that makes sense. And so The book unpacks that, and every chapter goes into different topics and stuff like that of what that looks like and what that means. But yeah, that's kind of where it came from.
Well, Jefferson, let's start with part of your own story, you know, that you kind of address in the beginning of the book. You know, you had tons of success young, and, you know, but kind of modern success does kind of encourage, especially in like media, encourages people to kind of build their platform and increase their reach, and kind of, you know, it assigns like these real metrics to the things that you're doing. What toll did that take on you personally in your marriage? And also, most importantly, like spiritually, how did it start to wear you down?
Yeah. I mean, I think the easy answer to that one is obviously that, like, you know, doing something for likes or affirmation or whatever isn't healthy, and obviously can create kind of this really bad cycle. But I think everyone kind of knows that one. The other thing I'll say, I think the more deeper version of that is that what kind of chasing a platform or chasing a building of an audience or kind of you becoming a brand, which I really kind of don't like that terminology about people, is it commodifies you, right? Like it dehumanizes you. It kind of vacuums you out and makes you a shell of a person. It's almost like the 1980s version of like politicians, right? Where you kind of have to be like shiny and this and that and presentable. But like we do that now with like social media influencers, and we all try to do that because we're trying to present kind of a packaged kind of political version of ourselves, not political in the true sense of the word, but, and so I think that's, and that's an ancient problem, right? Like you go back to Pharaoh, you go back to Egypt, you go back to Israel and that narrative. And obviously one of the detrimental things about Pharaoh was that he dehumanized and commodified Israelites. They were nothing but brick makers to him, right? They weren't the actual, and that's why Yahweh is so different, because Yahweh steps in, rescues them from Egypt, from slavery, and then says, actually, you are my people, right? I want to be your God. I want to be in relationship with you. He humanizes them and actually sees them holistically and complexly, which then allows him to bring them into relationship. When Pharaoh was, you're nothing but brick makers, right? And I think a lot of us were nothing, our culture is telling us we're nothing but brick makers. And what that does is that dehumanizes and commodifies, which then makes us transactional. And I don't think a human soul should ever kind of be treated as transactional. That's when I think we feel where we start to hollow out and we start to lose our humanness. And so, that's kind of the main thing I think that we see with this social media part of this conversation.
I think that the challenging part for some people, particularly who are like Christians and are in positions of influence, you know, they would kind of say, well, I feel like the more people that are following me and, you know, that are liking my stuff and sharing my stuff, the greater impact I can have for God, and that their motivations are, you know, at some level they're pure. I mean, obviously they can kind of get adulterated with these like, self-building, type of things. Like it's fun being popular, but for someone that whose motivations is pure, if they're like, listen, I know I'm overworking myself. I know I'm like kind of overextended, but my motivation is to reach as many people with the gospel as possible. Yeah. What would you say to them as sort of a cautionary, piece of advice?
So many things, I guess. The first thing is, I think you're actually right. I think you nailed it on the head. That is a pure heart. And I think a lot of us are coming from a pure heart, where a lot of us aren't trying to just be, you know, famous and make a bunch of money and all this. A lot of us actually just want to reach people. We want to communicate. We want to live our life for meaning and purpose. I think that's really what it comes down to. And that's so healthy and beautiful. But I think we have to always weight that in the whole story. And the hard part about the American narrative is that we kind of have gone so heavy-handed of every single person needs to change the world, right? Mm-hmm. Every single person needs to be making an enormous impact. I read about that, I think, chapter 2, that I think it was either BuzzFeed or maybe New York Times. There was a pretty long article on kind of the burnout generation, which is the millennial generation she talks about, and that's the name she gives us. And she talked about that, how like we have no more time in human history has there been more pressure on young people with their vocation, because it has to not only be meaningful, deeply meaningful, like which is hilarious, by the way, right? Because if you think about all of human history, like people just worked and it was a blessing. It's so interesting to me that we even have to like, it's got to give us so much ROI on meaning, rather than, I think, again, the scriptures and human history has just testified to the fact that, man, work in and of itself, right? Postman, lawyer, mom, any job out there, in and of itself is holy and beautiful and sacred. I think we've missed that. And then two, not only does it have to be super deep and meaningful, but then it has to be make our parents proud. And then it also has to have an edge of coolness to our friends. Mm-hmm. It's got to be kind of the cool like tech job or whatever, you know? And so you put all these things together, and that's nearly impossible for us to actually, any of us to actually achieve that. And even when we do achieve that, the reality is never as big as the dream, and reality is a lot harder, and the job's hard, and we move on and we bounce around and we don't stay grounded. And so I would say, I think, first of all, just be wary of that. Second of all, be wary of like that Jesus himself had the biggest impact in human history and had this enormous meaning and purpose and mission. Yet he still kind of bucks up against some of these things that we would deem very wrong in our culture. And one of those being like his audience got smaller and smaller as he went forward, right? Mm-hmm. Like he got more, like by the time he died, he had like a few people that maybe would have stuck around when in the beginning it was thousands and thousands. So that's interesting, first of all, that the person we follow is actually kind of an upside down pyramid in the sense of like his audience got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And then he was basically alone and isolated when he died. Now, I don't think a lot of us would call that success, right? Yeah. But clearly it is. Clearly it's actually the, at some level, clearly it's the actual archetype of success. Because then that was the greatest moment in human history where he actually was then, in, you know, crowned and lifted up as, you know, I think one of the most sarcastic or more double entendre moments ever was the sign above him that said King of the Jews while they were making fun of him. But he actually was King of the world. Yeah. And that was his moment. He was being put on the throne to reign and rule. And so I think like we just have to wrestle with that. I think it's a complex question. I think we want to do jobs of purpose and meaning. I think God has that for us. But I think we have to wrestle with like, man, the life of Jesus shows some interesting things. And then also on top of that, he's also chasing obscurity at some level. And that's why I have a whole chapter on that in the book of like, he actually like we think obscurity is a curse, right? If we're not famous, if we're not known, if we're not doing anything that's noticeable, Jesus himself like chased it. He actually was like, I want to go out into the desert. I want to retreat. I want to not be known. Every other page in some of the gospels is like, do not tell anyone what I just did. And so I think if we're not kind of letting that saturate in us, then that can, or if we are, that can kind of in a healthy way round out some of these parts about us that maybe are a little overblown.
That was Jeff Bethke. Next up, Ask the Cast. You're listening to Still I Miss You by Blue Hawaii. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. We've asked you to send us your most difficult, perplexing questions for a segment we like to call...
If you got something you want to know, now's the time to ask. It's Ask the Cast.
All right, Chandler, why don't you throw a couple of these our way? And then, Chandler, there's one I will save towards the end, and I will ask you. So hit us up with a couple of these questions here.
All right, Jimmy has a 3-part question for you guys.
Okay.
First,
oh man,
do you guys do Halloween?
Yes,
in a sense.
Do you dress up for Halloween?
I do. Absolutely. I usually try to do something thematically with my kids.
Okay. Well, that. Yeah, I love dressing up for Halloween. It's awesome. And anyone who says otherwise, like I said, I don't care if you call it by a different name and celebrate it at a church. It's still Halloween. It's still really fun to dress up.
Jesse, yeah. I know about the Carey family's theme.
Yeah.
This year, what's happening over in your household, John David?
Oh, you know what? That's the weird thing is this is the first year we haven't had it all figured out just yet.
So this could be a last minute decision.
Yeah, it's getting kind of hectic. Years past, we did an entire Lego theme where we did that. And then there was, of course, I'm going blank now. But we've done different themes throughout the years, and but this year, usually my elder son Asher is the one who gets to pick the theme, and he's been a little wishy-washy this year. He can't figure out what he wants to be. So we're kind of blaming children. Pick a theme already. Just pick a theme.
Chandler, what's the third part of the question?
So the third part is probably, you pretty much answered it already, but couples costumes, yes or no?
Absolutely.
I think it's better that way. Yeah, it's fun.
Here's the only downside of a couple's costume. It's like it only works if you're like in a very close physical proximity to your significant other for the whole evening. So let's say you go to a Halloween party, right? And you got some friends in the kitchen and your wife is in the living room and you're mingling around. Your denim, you know, full Justin Timberlake look doesn't really translate that well without the denim Britney.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're just like Levi's cowboy.
Yeah, you're just you Jay Leno. What is this? You know, like.
Hey, you hear that guy? There's a lot of denim. Clucks, gosh.
You know what I mean? Like, you really have to stay in close, proximity. Which is fine, but it's just something to keep in mind with a couple's costume. What else have we got, Chandler?
All right, Corbin asked, you are hosting a backyard barbecue and can invite any 3 people you want, living or dead. Which 3 people would you invite?
Oh, wow. So, man, I have a lot of backyard barbecues. Like, I'm a big backyard barbecue type of guy. And here, the great thing about backyard barbecues, everyone's chill. So any three people, dead or alive, like, okay, there's like the right answer, and then there's like the real answer. So yeah. Of course, like, the right answer is like, well, I would probably have Jesus, Paul, and Mary, and you know, just do a little Bible, a little Devo time.
Yeah.
You know, that's the right answer. JD, I'm going to think about mine for a sec. Who would you go with?
Well, I agree with you that there's like two levels of answers. There's like the Bible school answer, which is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Yeah,
because they can get right up in there. If you get a flare up, you know, you're like, oh no, the hot dog is burning. They're like, I got this. They reach their hand right in, pull it out.
Brisket. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Gosh. Like, some of the brisket fell in the back of the smoker. Can you guys help us out?
Guys.
Yeah.
We got this. Been okay. Here before. But yeah, no, I don't know. I'm kind of a mellow barbecuer. So
here's mine. It's either, you know, for the question is, you know, three people, living or dead, you can invite to a barbecue.
Okay.
Here's mine. Gallagher, the comedian, whose entire bit is smashing watermelons. I obviously have a lot of watermelons. I would also have Carrot Top. I would also have comedian Paula Poundstone, and it would just be shticky comedians hanging out in the backyard.
You could not drag me to this barbecue.
Doing mostly prop comedy in the backyard. I think it'd be a good time. I think everyone would remember, like, hey, do you remember that time we went to that barbecue? Carrot Top, Paula Poundstone, and Gallagher were there. Like,
rather
die. It's the only, like, you could, because if you were like, well, I take, you know, Michael Jordan, Ernest Hemingway, and you know, Ella Fitzgerald, like, yeah, it's like that'd be cool, but it's not going to be as memorable as having Carrot Top, Gallagher, and Paula Poundstone. And everyone's be like, dude, that was a crazy cookout. Gallagher hit somebody with a giant wooden mallet. The man's insane. Well, who would you choose?
That's such a tough, it's always so hard. That's like a lot of living or dead too. That just doesn't, because obviously you want to do the, like, oh, I'd get somebody smart, but I don't think I would want to get some, because what are you really going to ask these people? You know, what are you really going to ask these people? They haven't been asked a million times. Like, it's going to be weird. Like, what, you're going to get the Inklings to come to your barbecue? Like, they're not going to want to be there with you. They just came back from the dead for what, for an hour and a half with some brisket and some pork and beans. Yeah. That sounds like a miserable way to spend.
I just want to see what's new. And you're like, no, you're stuck here eating some hot dogs.
You have to tell me where you got the idea for Narnia. That's the only reason.
That's why you can't go wrong with prop comedians. All right, Jim, what other questions you got for us?
All right, Shamaria asked, what is your funniest foot and mouth story?
Oh, man. Yeah, I've got a few.
All right, Tyler, lead us off.
I've got
then.
A few. I'll try to make this short, but I did have one of those. There was a moment in college where I had to do a presentation on a book. I woke up the day it was due and realized, like, oh, that's due today, and I have not read the book, but I perused the back of the cover online, so I thought I had a pretty good idea. I could kind of like fake my way through it in front of the whole class for this oral report. But unfortunately, when I read that this was a book about the experiences of Indians in America, my mind went to Native Americans, when obviously it was about, like, Indians, like people from India. No. So I thought I had really, I thought I'd done a great job in oral report. Well, I thought I'd pass with flying colors until my friend, my so-called friend who was in the front row, who had picked the same book, raised his hand and said, well, I got something a little different out of the book. And I immediately realized, of course, that now I would have to continue to insist that my friend had actually read it wrong, when obviously he had correctly interpreted it. It wasn't bad. It was a disaster.
I don't know how, but I've been able to avert a lot of foot and mouth moments. But I do, I feel like the modern equivalent, and JD, I'm interested if you have any of these, is like the accidental reply all, you know, or like responding to the wrong text read. JD, do you have anything that's ever happened or that you have been a part of?
I've you know, I've skated away from all of those, but I've gotten really close. There've been a few times, especially the text message threads.
Yeah.
Cause you're like needing to send a text to somebody. So you like type in the person's name really briefly. And then as it's like auto filling in who you're going to send it to, you just select the first one. You're like, yeah, let's go. And then you type out this like long, vicious text about someone. And then right before you hit send, like by the grace of God, you look up and you see like, oh no,
I'm sending it to that person.
So I've avoided that one, but and that's close.
That's why Aunt Jane doesn't come to Thanksgiving.
once or twice I've been pretty close to sending a personal tweet on the Relevant account. That's almost happened a couple of times. It's never happened, but there's been some close sale where like, oh, gotta make sure you switch that account over. We don't need the Relevant audience getting over with all the Tyler Huckabee. Yeah, Tyler Huckabee takes.
We're not ready for that. Yeah. All right, Chandler, what else you got for us, ma'am?
Ad asks, how much eye contact is too much eye contact with a bandmate?
a very specific question.
And I see why you asked us, three guys who know a lot about.
Yeah,
I guess watching band.
Smart.
Watching, but I will say this: is it like I have a couple? I have a couple follow up questions. Like, if it's in the performance, I feel like you're just making it awkward for literally everyone in the crowd if you're just staring at your bandmate. Right. If it's you're in the recording studio and it's like their turn to record their track and you're making eye contact with them, you're just making them very nervous. I feel like very little eye contact is necessary. What do you think about eye contact?
Well, I think this is the whole controversy of the Civil Wars, wasn't it? Like, though, how much eye contact is too much eye contact between those two?
That's true.
Because at first it was like, oh, this is the sweet like love song duet thing. And you're like, oh, this is do they realize we're even here in this room with them?
That is true. Like the Sonny and Cher thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. It depends on the context. Because if you're in a band with like somebody you like, if it's a husband wife type situation, that's one thing. If it's a Johnny Swims situation,
Sure.
But then things can get really weird.
It
otherwise
can get weird and creepy quickly. It can go from charming to creepy really quick.
It's a fine line. I know we're not really answering the question here. It's kind of a tough one. I think
I will say this. It gets creepy really fast, especially if you're in a worship band. All right, Chandler, give us one more.
All right, last one. This one's a pretty quick one. What's your favorite type of muffin?
I like muffins that aren't muffin-like. I like muffins that are basically giant chocolate chip cookies shaped like muffins. Like, give me a good chocolate chip, a chocolate muffin with chocolate chips that is essentially, like, at that point, it's a brownie shaped like a muffin. Give me that. That's what I want.
I love blueberry muffins, but I like the really garbage made out of a box ones. Not even the fancy made out of the box ones where it has like the crumbles on top. No. Get that garbage out of here. I want just like the boringest, plain, like low middle class Betty Crocker in a box.
Dude, my kids eat mini muffins that come in like little bags prepackaged. Yes. You get them out and like they're like oily for some reason. Like,
yeah,
not like a muffin. Yeah. It's like a muffin meatball. Like, that's literally like what the consistency of it. Tyler, what's your muffin choice, man?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Jesse. I think muffins are trash, generally speaking. Like, it needs to be really, really sweet for me, or else it's just like it's a lot of bread. It's okay, it dries your mouth, it sucks all the moisture out of your mouth, and they're just not all that good. The tops are fine, I guess, but even then, give me a donut. A bad donut's better than a really good muffin.
All right, Chandler, I got one for you. One comes from Noah, and Noah noted that JD has already gotten his own segment, Strange Happenings, which he debuted and talked about some interesting things. Chandler, Noah wants to know if you will do your own segment, but here's the segment. It's called Chandler's Booth, and you sit and review dishes from average franchise restaurants. I feel like you're very capable of Would you consider an episode of Chandler's Booth?
What places would I go other than Chili's and Olive Garden?
I mean, I can just start listing them off. Yeah. You know, Applebee's, Ruby Tuesday, Chevy's.
I bring a field recorder to the restaurant, and from the table, it's just kind of what I'm thinking about these dishes. Like, nobody else is there. It's just me and them.
No, it's just you. Okay. Stream of consciousness, like eating sliders.
Unfiltered. All right. I'm down. Let's do it.
Okay. Chandler's booth coming. Just send me the file. I'll make sure it gets stitched into the next pod. Just trust me on it. Don't worry about it. Cool. All right. Well, hey, that'll do it for this week's Ask the Cast. Remember, you can tweet us your questions and we may select yours on the show. I want to thank Jeff Bethke for joining us. You can check out his new book, To Hell with Hustle. It drops next week. You can pre-order it now and it'll be in the mail. And you'll get it like the day it comes out next week. Also, I want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring the show. Remember, you can go to squarespace.com/relevant for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code relevant to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Also, be sure to check out our other podcast, Relevant Daily. You get news coming to you every day. And check out our new podcast for church leaders. It's called Called. We've had some really great guests. I know for a fact they just recorded a fascinating interview with the legend N.T. Wright. So be sure to check out that pod and everything else we're doing over at relevantmagazine.com. All right. Well, thanks, guys. That'll do it for this week. I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm John David Harris.
I'm Tyler Huckabee.
I'm Chandler String.
We'll see you guys on Tuesday.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
If you're interested in doing a late night TV show that will shoot in my garage, and you will also come to live in my house and be an Uncle Phil, like wide, sage, wholesome figure in my life, please call me.
Relevant Podcast Network.